On behalf of the Professional Baseball Strength and Conditioning Coaches Society, I'd like to welcome you to the PBSCCS podcast. I'm your host, Chris Messina. All right, everybody, I'm here with Justin Bucco of the Cincinnati Reds organization. Justin, thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate your time. Tell the listeners about yourself, if you would, please.
Thank you for having me, Chris. My name is Justin Bucco, like you said. I started my journey, I guess, at the University of Wisconsin-Platteville, where I was playing football. And then from there, a presenter came into our class and presented about strength and conditioning, and obviously we had a strength and conditioning coach, but didn't give me a great insight at such a small level, but I kind of took it from there. And then I had the opportunity to work at a high school when I got out of college, and I worked with Milwaukee Lutheran High School from there. Which was a great opportunity. You know, you get to learn a lot with a bunch of high schoolers, anywhere from eighth grade to guys and girls going into their senior year, which was kind of learning through mistake making, basically. And I still have that original program, so that's interesting to look back on and go, oh, I did not know what I was doing. But from there, went to the University of Wisconsin as an intern with the basketball and hockey teams, and worked with Eric Helen and Jim Snyder, which were both great, great people to learn from and work with. And then my wife and I got married, and we moved out to D.C. for her job with the USDA and then the FDA. And I interned with Georgetown. And while I was there, I was also doing my master's and worked there for 2 years, finished my master's, and was the assistant general manager of a gym in D.C., which was all kind of hard to do all at once, but, you know, got through it. And then I went to the CSCCA conference and got that certification through Georgetown. And while I was there, I remember sitting there and going, you know, it's been 2.5 years of interning and nothing is happening. I think I need to move on to the next place. So I reached out to Maryland when I got home and got that internship with the Olympic Sports Department. Worked with Esteban Doria, who you've had on this podcast, and a couple other great strength coaches. And from there, a buddy of mine from undergrad called me and said, I've been working with the Reds, and now I got a job with the University of Minnesota as their wrestling and baseball strength and conditioning coach. And he was like, but I really think you would love it. I know that you've had some trouble getting on with a college. He's like, I'd encourage you to apply. And so I did. And he put in a reference for me. And then I started working with the Reds. And from there, I did the AZL my first year, and then I did Billings, and now this year I am going to be with Dayton, and that's our low A affiliate in the Midwest League, and here we are.
Cool, man. I like the story, and it speaks volumes of you, you know, putting in your dues, paying your dues, and being consistent and still like, okay, something is going to come eventually. Something is going to come eventually. And you were putting the hustle and you were doing a bunch of different things, and it paid off for you. So that's a story of success in my mind.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a long haul, but you look back on it and you go, okay, well, the high school taught you how to work with all sorts of different people. And the management position was kind of weird. The guy at Georgetown told me that he had done it, and it worked wonders for helping him get into that director role and understanding budgeting, understanding operations, understanding how to deal with different levels of people, communication, all sorts of different office related things that, you know, you don't really think of or aren't really taught as you're going through your exercise science program. So that was a unique opportunity that is odd, but it was very useful for me.
Yeah, when I look back on my past, like, I've done some things that may not be directly related to even strength and conditioning, but you look at those and you can take learning pieces from those and say, okay, like for me, I worked at Big Lots for 4 years. Like I learned how to talk to people and customer service and things like that, okay, they might not be strength and conditioning, but I have a better understanding of how to talk to people now because of those things. So everything in your past can kind of help guide you towards your present if you take the opportunity to learn from it.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
And so that kind of leads me into what we're going to talk about on this one. You wrote an article for the PBSCCS titled Making the Most of Your Off Season. And when I first saw it, I thought it was going to be another like, here's how to train your athletes in the off season. Here's how they can make better. And it was actually a coaching education piece, which for me is huge. I read it. I loved it. And I was like, you know, other people need to hear about this. And that's why I reached out, because there is a big window of time, the off season, that you can do things to make yourself better. And the article hit it right on the head. And so kind of go into just a general overview of the article, maybe your purpose for writing, and then we can dive a little deeper.
Yeah, well, I mean, it started with our director of strength and conditioning, our big league strength coach, wants us all to be involved in. It pushes you outside your comfort zone, so I appreciate that. And then when you're thinking about it, I had a few different ideas, and I was jotting them all down, and I thought this was the best one to go with because, you know, the turnover in our profession, at least in baseball, seemed to be high when I first got into it. And so with all the new people coming on, I thought, well, the best way that I can pay it forward is I can't tell a 25-year strength and conditioning coach how to do his job or her job better, but I can give some advice on things that I learned and along my journey. So I put it together, and it was more out of just realizing that my first, I would say, two-thirds of my off season, my first off season, was not as productive as I wanted it to be. You know, when you're an intern, you're grinding in the gym, but then when you go home or you get a break in between sessions, you're constantly trying to read different things. And then I took that off season to just kind of be with my wife, spend time with her. You know, you're gone for so long that you don't see her very often. So at first I took it like, oh, I'll just relax. Like, you know, it's great. You got 3 months off. But then I started to think like, all right, well, you know, there's a lot more that I need to learn, especially coming from a football background. You know, I enjoy baseball, but I love football, playing it. But now, as I've switched over to this role, I really love the different cultures, the different languages, all that stuff that you get with baseball, along with strength and conditioning and the sport. So I needed to learn more and more so that I felt more and more confident and competent at my job, even though, you know, you get told, oh, you're doing a great job, you're doing this, you're doing that. But then you go to winter meetings or you're somewhere and you hear coaches say, well, I got thrust into this position and I wasn't ready, or I got promoted and I thought I was ready and then I was drinking from a fire hose. So I decided to change my off season, and I basically wrote the article about what I've done and how it's, I guess, how it's helped me or why I chose to do it that way. So the four main points were to take stock, which came from my high school strength coach, who at the end of every year would just, and I had some conversations, he's a good mentor of mine. He would always look back at the year, what were the injuries, what went well, what didn't go well, and how can he address his programming or his annual plan to either alleviate some of the injuries or to make the team more competitive. Were they in good shape, not great? What were the deficiencies of his program? And then, but it's also taking stock of your own career. You know, at the end of every year, I get a report of how I did from my coordinator, and I chose to go one step further and say, these are the five areas that I'd like to work on, and I think, or maybe six. And then he said, there's two other ones, I believe, is how it went. And so I have a list in my notes section of my iPhone, the order and things that I want to pursue. And so I've taken that and made a plan for this off season. And like some of the things are like getting better with technology or becoming more proficient with Spanish and things like that. So just taking stock of your annual plan is how you're going to grow as a professional, and your annual plan for your athletes. And then making the most of the conferences. Last year, I remember going to winter meetings and feeling like, you know, I'm new to this. I don't know if I should even be talking to anybody. But then you start talking to coaches and everybody, and you start realizing that, you know, you can build relationships and you can learn about the technologies without having to purchase them. Like, these people are there to sell you their product, but it's to help you become a better coach and help you with your team. But they're also very knowledgeable, and they'll talk with you about it. So, you know, you can go and network with other strength and conditioning coaches at the winter meetings or at the NSCAs or whichever conference you choose to go to. But you can also learn a lot about the latest technologies that are coming out, even some that maybe have came out a few years ago, you just don't have enough experience with. So this year was definitely, that was my goal going into both conferences that I've attended, just to talk to as many people and find out as much about the technology as I could. Then I think it was the next one is today, a reader, tomorrow a leader, which was just something that was in my head when I was writing it. But my first boss, when I was a personal trainer at the Wisconsin Athletic Club, said there are 74 articles published each day. And then I started doing some more research, and it's about accurate. So 74 articles published each day just on exercise science alone. Obviously, they don't all relate to baseball-specific strength and conditioning, but there's 74 articles each day. How are you possibly going to keep up with them all? And I think you obviously have to be choosy with your time and which ones you read. But that just kind of hit me from that moment that there's a lot coming out every day. And then there was another article that I read and I referenced in that article that said the last time that the majority of people go and read research is in college. So, you know, we're in the profession and we're trying to provide the best training, the best recovery methods, the best whatever for our athletes. And if there's so many papers coming out each day, you need to stay up to date with all those things. So that was part of that reasoning. And then the last one was stepping up to the plate, which came from a presentation by Brian Mann last year, who was talking about the latest trends and the latest research in strength and conditioning. And he had just said, like, you know, I don't want to misquote him, but basically he said, you are in a privileged position with all these great athletes the researchers don't have access to. It is our job, if we're tired of seeing, you know, a research paper on an untrained population and how a certain type of programming will affect them, it's our job to start pushing the field forward, driving it forward, and researching some things on our own, collecting data, whatever it might be. Obviously, there's things that you have to be careful with the players' union and things like that, but at least starting to collect data and starting to talk about things that you're doing with your athlete, even if you never really present the data and put it into a paper, you can still communicate as other strength and conditioning coaches come to town. You can talk about what you're doing, what are their thoughts, have they ever done anything like that, so on and so forth, where you can, and you know, really start talking shop with them on something different that you're doing. And you know, it struck a chord with me, and I chose to try to take some stuff and with our minor league budget, obviously not being what a big league budget is, you know, we try to do some things. So I played with resting heart rate and things like that this season, found some interesting trends with, you know, with recovery each morning, and we'll continue to do stuff with that and collect the data and try to see if I can find some things that are helpful and talk with people about it and see what they've found and continue to try to grow and help teach what I have to teach, or, you know, explain my research, I suppose.
Yeah, and like I said, I read it, I really enjoyed it, and I'm encouraging anybody that's listening to read it. It's a short article, and it's definitely worth your time. But even if they don't read it, what key takeaways do you want to provide for coaches? Maybe two or three things that, if even if they don't read the article, this is what you should take from either this discussion or eventually if they do read the article, right from the article.
Yeah, I guess I would say that have a plan for your off season, and with whatever continuing education you choose to pursue, whether that's books, articles, conferences, whatever. Then once you take that information, take notes, and devise an implementation plan of what you've learned. Because at the end of the day, if you go and you become FMS certified, but you have no implementation plan for how you're going to use it with your athletes, what time of the day you're going to have them do the correctives, things like that, the education isn't really doing you any good. So that's where I would go with that. And then, you know, maybe not read so fast, but actually read, understand, question it, play devil's advocate, and try to find things that are beneficial for you, your team, your staff, and do a little research and collect some data on if some players want to volunteer, collect some data and share it with your team and see what you guys can do to continue to make strides as a staff.
And for you personally, do you think you had a successful offseason this offseason, just kind of following your own advice on this?
I think so. I mean, like I said, I'm coming from a football background. So baseball, you know, I didn't play in the minors or even in college. So it's not the same for me where I understand exactly how they feel or anything like that. But I'm trying to familiarize myself with the sport more and more. Obviously, I'm around it. I'm watching it. I'm talking to them. But, you know, there's just different things that I have to learn. And that's where I have a folder of article titles. And then I have different articles in each folder of the sections where I really want to grow and learn and understand things better. So I have in each folder two subfolders that said read and unread. And then as I read them, I transfer the folders and just try to continue to grow. And I've listened to some podcasts, I've read some books, and I feel like I have some ideas for next season, and I'm ready to go into that season and then do it all over again.
Right on, man. Well, I appreciate you going further into the detail about the article. And again, as I said, all the listeners really should read that article and kind of start planning their own off seasons. And like you said in the title, making the most of your off season goes a long way for you, and it goes a long way for the other coaches on your staff, and obviously for your players as well.
Yeah.
So I kind of skipped over this one, but I want to go back to it. I've been asking a lot of people on that podcast lately just to hear some stories, and I want to hear your best professional baseball story, whether it's a story of success or maybe something that got lost in translation. You know, you're in rookie ball, so I'm sure you've seen a lot of things in those past few years. So I want to hear your best baseball story or memory that you have so far.
Yeah, I was thinking about this one for a little while. This was probably the hardest one to answer, more or less because you don't know what's a great story or what's not a great story. But as far as the strength and conditioning, my first experience on the field was I was out there for stretched them, warmed them up, and they're doing their throwing program. And my trainer that year came up to me and said, "Hey, I need you to take this guy over here," points to him and said, "You know, he's dealt with a little bit of a quad injury. I need you to bring him back on a running progression." I was like, "Oh, yeah, it's no big deal. It's easy enough." And then he said, "Well, how's your Spanish?" And he said, "Because he doesn't know a lick of English." And I went, "All right, that makes it a lot more difficult." And I had started to minor in Spanish until I switched to strength and conditioning. So I felt somewhat comfortable, and I had told Zach when he hired me that my goal was to be fluent in Spanish, and I had bought Rosetta Stone and gone into it and everything. So I felt somewhat comfortable, and I was like, "Well, it'll be all right." And I went up to him, and I wouldn't say it was a train wreck, but it wasn't great. It was learning to talk with someone that actually speaks fluent Spanish, and it was a bit different than practicing on an app on your phone or reading from a textbook. So it was very interesting, but I got to develop a bond with him. I called him my teacher in Spanish and asked him to continue to help me grow and understand how to structure a sentence better or when I mess up to correct me. And I had him actually last year as well, and it was, you know, I don't know whether or not I'll have him this year, but he's a great, great kid. His English has came a long ways, and I hope that my Spanish has as well. But that was interesting being first day, just, "Hey, go test your Spanish out and see what you got." And I was, "All right, give it a shot."
Yeah, it's something that just about probably everybody that's been in baseball has experienced at one point in time or the other. And it's good that you're trying to learn the language, man. It really goes a long way with the guys. And I've said it before on the show, I'm trying to learn it as well. My wife's fluent, so she's been helping me out. But it's different, like you said, you know, learning it in an app or in Rosetta Stone and then going and actually talking to somebody who's fluent in Spanish. And you're like, okay, back to the drawing board on this one.
Yeah, so much faster, so much harder to comprehend and to understand.
I'm 100% there with you. I've been there. I'm sure plenty of the listeners have also been there as well. So what do you believe in within strength and conditioning that others think you are crazy for believing?
Oh, see, this one, and I've listened to this podcast or other things where people are talking about that. I don't know if there's necessarily something in strength and conditioning that I believe is someone, sure, someone's going to think you're crazy for doing something, but you'll probably think they're crazy for doing what they're doing. But the thing that I've settled on, two things. Number one is every place I've been, people or the strength and conditioning coaches tend to care so much about the music that they don't want the players to choose it, or they don't want. So maybe I'm crazy for not caring and actually wanting them to choose it so that they enjoy their lift. But that's kind of a side note. I think the main thing that I wouldn't say is that they think I'm crazy for believing, but it's just odd. And you and I had talked about this, is the Google study about what creates successful teams and creating an atmosphere and a team. A team atmosphere that is allowing for people to be psychologically vulnerable and to be able to say, I need help with this, or I struggle with that, or I'm really good at this, let me help you, or to say something and not be laughed at. I think when they did the study and found that that was the number one thing that created a successful team, was the ability to speak, ask for help, or say what's on your mind without having someone come down hardly or harshly on you. That was something I took an interest in, and I started to implement it this year with a daily question of the day, I guess. And there's some weird questions, some would you rather, some this or that, but it worked out really well where my team was much more cohesive. I don't know necessarily if that was the specific reason. I'd like to think it had something to do with it, because the year before it was not as cohesive. It wasn't as gelled, and everybody was trying to communicate and talk. And it was really cool to see the interaction. Once you asked a question, everyone gave their answer, and then you go to stretch, and then you're stretching, and people are still talking about, I can't believe you said this, I can't believe you said that. And it just kind of created a more fun stretch than just the typical every day it's a stretch, and you know, we're doing this twice a day every day, and it's boring, it's whatever. So it kind of lightened it up, and it also helped people open up a little bit to each other.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. And like you said, we talked about it a little bit at winter meetings, the psychological safety aspect of things, and it's cool that you were able to implement it and see firsthand, like, okay, this is actually working, this is something that my guys are responding well to. And they probably looked forward to it eventually. If you know, you just, sometimes it feels a little weird at the beginning that you do something new, but if you just keep plugging away, I'm sure by the end the guys are like, all right, what are you going to ask us today? Like, they're probably very, very excited to hear from you.
Yeah, it was a little bit of that. And it was a little bit of, I have a question for today, or I have a question for today. And then you say, well, tell me it first, because I don't want you to tell it to the group, and then it's bad, or it's derogatory or inappropriate or whatever. And then with the coaching staff, it was a little bit different, because I don't think and this is advice that you guys gave me, was make sure that they're completely on board. They understand what you're doing. I had done it with the manager, but not the pitching coach, the bench coach, things like that. So, it was a little bit odd the first time or two that I did it. And then I explained it to them, and then it went over much better, and they got involved and they gave their answers. So, It was just a fun thing to do that kind of helped loosen everyone up. So I'll probably be doing it again. Just got to think of new questions every day. It's a little difficult.
Right on, man. So what do you think makes a strength and conditioning coach successful? Maybe in general, and then more specifically in professional baseball.
I think in general, you can't get complacent, and then you need to have a purpose, a passion, and to be prompt, not just on time for stretch, but also on time with your daily, weekly, monthly responsibilities to whomever it needs to go to. Aside to that, like I said before, is to keep reading, start implementing what you're reading, and continue to track the data, gather the data, I suppose, as well. I would say for baseball specifically, my best advice would be to learn Spanish. I wouldn't call myself fluent by any means, but I'm proficient enough in the weight room, on the field, and there's been some times where I've had 20, 30-minute conversations all in Spanish with a couple of players. Yeah, there's a moment here or there that I don't know how to say a specific word, or they say something that I don't know, and we have to use the Google Translate or something. But for the most part, it is much more fun to do this job when you can have a deeper relationship with all of your players than just the ones that speak English. And I would say that most people get into this profession because they want to make an impact on the kids' lives, and they want to help push them. And I always kind of like to say, which is something I got from a pastor in DC, but is I like to do life with my players. And you can't really do life with them and experience the ups and downs that they're experiencing if you can't talk to them and ask them about it. So not only will it help you in your professional career, as far as doors will open with your ability to speak Spanish at least proficiently, if not fluently, but you get to also know the kids that you're working with a lot better, and it's always much more enjoyable that way.
Yeah, I agree. It's really fun to be able to interact with those guys, because they honestly, they're so funny, and the jokes that they make, like, sometimes you miss them because you just don't understand the language. So when you have a little bit better grasp, like, those guys are really, really funny, and some of the things they say, you're like, man, I would not expect that coming from you. So it's like you said, it's cool to be able to interact with everybody.
Yeah, it's great. And then I think the last piece of advice that I learned that this year is our rehab and assistant minor league coordinator, strength and conditioning coach, he had said to realize that everyone is here for the athlete, and that you can't let your pride of what you think is best getting in the way of what is actually best for the athlete. And, sometimes when you're working with several different people, including the athlete, where you all think one thing might be more important than the other, you realize that, everyone's here for the athlete. They're not trying to throw you under the bus or do anything silly like that. Like, you're all trying to get the best out of the athlete and allow that guy to go as far as he can.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Couldn't agree more. And the big thing there is the pride thing. Like, sometimes you have to put that to the side just for the sake of the athlete. Like, there's things that I like to do myself, and then there's things that I know are good for certain people, and they don't always align, but you have to put your own bias aside for the sake of that athlete.
Right on.
So I'd like to do a lightning round with you. What do you got on that? You got time for me?
I have plenty of time.
Awesome. Let's do it. First question. Who is your biggest influence in the field of strength and conditioning?
I can't limit it to one, because I think they all play their role. My high school strength coach, Lemoyne Hawley, showed me exactly what a good strength and conditioning coach is. Then my collegiate strength and conditioning coach, Jason Wagner, taught me how to care about athletes. Just as much as you want to make them better, you need to care about them. And a guy at Maryland while I was there, Ryan Cotter, who's now with Real Salt Lake, helped me become a strength and conditioning coach and taught me a lot about the conditioning aspect and programming that and such. And then Morgan Gregory, who you've had on this as well, my first year in the AZL 2 years ago, he was there pretty much the year round. And every question that I had is not necessarily new to baseball. I'd worked with it in Georgetown and Maryland, but every question that I had, he was able to field and, give me little nuggets here and there and really help me grow in the professional baseball side of things, not just strength and conditioning. So those four guys together make up those mentors, I suppose.
Perfect. One piece of equipment to train with, what would you choose?
I would choose the barbell, but if I was going to say it's for the athletes, then I'd probably wind up going with the kettlebell.
Yeah, that's kind of the reoccurring answer on here.
Yeah.
Biggest accomplishment professionally and or personally?
Well, personally, it's somehow, some way getting my wife convinced to marry me. And professionally would be landing the job and taking a risk to do this year-round away from your family and your wife and everything. That it's been great, and it's been more than I thought it would ever be.
Last one. Any career other than strength and conditioning, what would you choose?
You know, before this, I wanted to be a math teacher before I switched over, or a firefighter. And then I think if it was to go south and I was to try to have to do something completely different than exercise related, I would probably try to get involved with the community somehow in doing some sort of, you know, nonprofit, or I don't necessarily know about politician, but governmental work or something where you can be involved with the community and help kind of affect some change for the good of the community, the city, the state, the country, etc.
Right on, man. Well, I appreciate your time, and like I said, you sharing your further thoughts on the article that you wrote. And if the listeners want to get in touch with you, where can we get more from you? Are you on social media, or is there a better place?
The social media is very, very limited. I would say LinkedIn would be the best thing. I am on there quite a bit just to kind of go into, you know, continuing education, things like that. Otherwise, email is jbucko@reds.com. And those are the only two things that I would say is a really good way. But feel free to reach out. I'm more than happy to communicate.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate it, and we'll be catching up soon.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you.
All right, everybody. That concludes this episode with Justin. I hope you enjoyed this one. Like I said in the episode, I really encourage you to go and find his article on the PBSCCS website and read it, take notes, read it over again. It's a really, really good article. Three things that I took from Justin: avoid complacency, take stock in your off season, and do what is best for your athletes. With that being said, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll talk to you again on the next one.